Hello, Radio Memphis. This is Kathleen Davison, and I'm joined with Pamela Beatty. I am the filmmaker of the feature film Primrose Lane, which is a psychological thriller that delves into time, dimension, paranormal activity. And Pamela Beatty is here as our paranormal specialist today on today's segment, where we're going to talk a little bit more in an ongoing series. Now, this is our third installment with Radio Memphis, and we're going to continue on right up through Halloween morning on Saturdays and on the DJ Bay Show, and we're going to go even beyond that. So you can keep joining us and tuning in to podcasts and other radio stations we'll be visiting on and posting those podcasts to the Primrose Lane Facebook page. You can find us at Primrose Lane Movie on Facebook. So let's get into today. This is where we left off. I'm going to give you the quick teaser update on the actual paranormal happenings that inspired the making of the film Primrose Lane and its ongoing series, The Passage. So I moved into a house, Victorian mansion circa 1885, and I lived there for 6 years with my family. Started out with me, my husband, and an 18-month-old baby and a little dog. By the time we left, we had added another child and a second little dog. And in the time that we were there, we had very consistent, inexplicable activity going on. We went on to make a movie that was inspired by that that experience, and ultimately we had paranormal investigators come to investigate, and we were shocked with their ability to not only confirm what we had experienced, but how their individual investigations overlapped. So we're taking you through this in a weekly episodic behind-the-scenes story so that you can decide for yourself, and we are going to welcome callers in upcoming episodes as well, where you can call in and share your stories and ask questions of Pamela, the almighty goddess of the paranormal for us, for our purposes.
I'm putting that on a business card.
So really quick, I'm going to let Pamela introduce herself again and just tell very quickly what she does.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's nice to be here with you. What I do, I'm an empathic intuitive, which means I feel everything through my intuition. I feel everything first. Most people will hear it or they'll see it. With me, I'm empathic, so I feel it. And also a spirit medium and a past life therapist. So I don't just see what is happening in this lifetime, I see the source of it. So I can go back to the very beginning of time to find out what happened in that house, for example. And that's what I do.
Awesome. Not everybody has an Aunt Pamela hanging around to give this kind of explanation. Certainly didn't, which is probably why, in a cathartic way, I had to tell this story later on in my adult life, because there's plenty of stuff that happened from childhood on that I sure as heck didn't understand. So now we're glad we have you here to answer all of our burning questions. So to catch you up to speed, I move into this house, and on the very first night there, I hear a woman's disembodied voice say my name. Pretty simple. At the time, I was very happy to dismiss it away as an active imagination in a new space. I, at heart, am a skeptic, and I don't believe anything that I can't experience myself. As time went on, that woman's voice was heard by every member of the family and also visitors to the home, and we were able to identify what seemed like the same entity. In addition to that, we heard footsteps very consistently, and they seemed to be two separate entities, one that we identified as potentially belonging to this woman whose voice we had heard. She seemed very light in frame and foot, and the other that seemed to be a child. And if you tuned into our podcast last week, you'll know that we assumed for the first year that we were there, as we heard these footsteps on baby monitors throughout the house, we believed it to be our then toddler son, and came to find out a year in that, in fact, it wasn't him. When I had the first experience where I heard the footsteps and could see my son and knew, and we were alone in the house, and I realized that all of these occurrences that I attributed to my son very possibly were the something else. Now, we talked a little bit last week, Pamela was filling us in, that in fact, yes, there was another guest in the home with us, a little boy, and we're going to take you closer and closer to our understanding of who that was and why he was there. So we're picking it up today. First we have the voices, then we hear the footsteps, and then one of the most significant things that happened in the home, and mind you, I'm taking you through the highlight points, there were so many little events in between, both for our family and for visitors to home, where things moved. They would hear doors opening, closing. They would hear footsteps. Some of the most consistent were what seemed to be this woman and this child, but then there were at times what sounded like a man's boot steps on hardwood. And people who had seen various entities in the home. So I'll take you to the moment. One day I'm in the kitchen, and I'm there alone with my son, who at the time was two, almost three. And he was playing in an area in the house, and it was the one spot in the house that every time I would pass through, it would do that, send, you know, put your hairs on end and give you chills. Even if it was the middle of the day, I didn't need to feel creeped out for any reason. He loved to go back there and play. It's kind of a little alcove between the dining room and the kitchen. And one day he was playing as I was doing dishes, and he came to me and said, Mama, I hear the voices, but I can't tell what they're saying. And with my children at this time, there was only one, I was very careful not to confirm or deny their experience, because in my own childhood, I had had things happen to me that to this day I can't fully understand, and my parents were not able to help me with an understanding. And I think it was maybe a little bit, not to slight my parents, but I think it was a little bit damaging that I couldn't understand what was going on. And now as an adult, I'm writing stories about the paranormal. So my son comes and asks me, and my response to him is, I don't know. What are they saying? And very consistently, I would give an open-ended response that would turn it back on him to further investigate the answer and let me know what he concluded. So he toddles off back to this alcove and then comes back moments later, very distressed. And he's pulling on the sleeve of my blouse and saying that we have to leave, and insistent that we have to leave, and literally pulling me out of the room. I followed him to the front porch of the home outside, and then I stopped him and tried to calm him and asked him, you know, what was wrong. And he said, Mama, there are holes in the house and things can come through. And this is a kid who loved bugs, so I got that he probably wasn't talking about creepy crawlies, spiders, things like that. And I said, what do you mean? And he couldn't find the words to articulate the experience. And again, this is a kid who was pretty talkative, and at this point he's still forming vocabulary and putting together thoughts and ideas and words. But he pulled me back into the home. I asked him to show me. He was afraid to go back in initially. And what I would do, and perhaps a false sense of security, because he would have these experiences, seeing and feeling and hearing things that I could not. So I would tell him that we were more powerful than these experiences or whatever he was tapping into, and that he had the power to tell these things to go away. Now, I didn't honestly know if that was true. Pamela? Did I lie to my child?
When in doubt, lie to your child.
Did I lie to my child?
No, you didn't. And I think the most important thing, and all parents should take note of that, is that you allowed him to tell you what he saw without making him feel he was lying or making it up. I think that is the key element. Listen, they're not shut down like we are. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get older, you shut it down. And so the most important thing about that was that you allowed him to say that, and you recognized his truth. Mm-hmm. You recognized what he was saying. So even though you didn't have the answer, it was important that you let him continue to ask those questions.
Well, and here's the thing you need to know. A little backstory on our family dynamic. Our kids go to a school called Waldorf, and the Waldorf curriculum asks that you really keep the kids out of mainstream media and commercialism. So you have to understand, this was not a kid who grew up watching cartoons or TV or those standard things we might think that might influence a child to have these kinds of ideas. The other thing that was so fascinating to me as a parent, and anyone who's raised children will identify, as they're learning to speak, they put together simple words initially and sounds that are very repetitive, and then they slowly build upon them. And initially, they don't have the ability to construct story the way we ultimately do. It's a pretty literal experience and commentary on what's going on and what they're observing. So I was particularly intrigued with both of my kids, because now my kids have a 3-year age difference, and they both experience seeing, hearing, being touched by things in the home that we could not. And because for them, it seemed that around and after the age of 3, the experience started to diminish. And I'm particularly interested in wondering, Pamela, if you have any insight on this for us, because I'm not the only one. I've talked to other parents who say that their children talked about angels or where they had been before they came here or saw things that they didn't in their homes. Is there something about this magic age? Is it about brain development? Is this just a scientific phenomena? Is it a spiritual one? What can you lend to our understanding of that?
Wow, that's a pretty deep question.
Yeah, we don't have an hour or 2 or 5, so give us the Cliff Note version.
Wow, let me think about that one. Okay, so most, and I think it's because when small children, when the soul comes into the body, and it is still in touch with the other side quite a bit more than we are, and so they'll still see the spirits, they'll see the light, they'll see the dark, they have a certain understanding of it. And the longer their soul is in the body, they acclimate more to a physical plane. So technically, that's what they're doing. And with some kids like myself, we never acclimated. So I'm still the same as I was as a kid. But most kids just get so, they get further and further into their body and further connected to the earth plane. And then as they do that, it kind of lets go of that. What to them at the time is normal becomes paranormal, and they're not in touch with that paranormal aspect as they grow older. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's a certain age. I think it's depending on the soul. Mm-hmm. And so the longer you're in here, the less you're connected. Mm-hmm. That's why as adults, we forget that we had imaginary friends as little kids.
Well, and what made it interesting as a parent is I watched 2 kids who were enough years apart that by the time the second came along and had the experience, the other had outgrown experiencing it. So they couldn't inform. They didn't remember it either. So one was not informing the other. And that was a little bit mind-blowing to me. Now, when people hear the story, again, they say, the kid told you. The kid told you. Why didn't you leave? And it's the thing you see in all the horror films, right? When the innocent lamb of a character tells all of the other idiots who aren't paying attention and nobody listens and they all end up dying. So for me at that point, again, that was a little bit scary, but it was one of the first things that did feel a little bit threatening that happened in the home. A lot of what had happened to that point had been more fascinating and mundane. So, Pamela, should I have listened to the kid?
No, you wouldn't have had your story.
From a purely selfish and commercial standpoint, the answer is no.
The answer is no. No, you shouldn't have, because it wasn't causing harm. I mean, I was in the house, and I know there weren't, it was causing shock, maybe a little bit, but it wasn't causing you physical harm. And I feel like maybe, well, you did indeed help the house as well.
Well, it does come to a turning point where there are members of the family that would argue that there was harm eventually being caused. So we're going to, as we wrap out today's episode, we're going to give you the little teaser for what comes next. So one night I am writing. As I've shared in past episodes, as a writer, I often write late at night and early morning hours when the world is sleeping. And my husband was asleep in the guest room, which is in the downstairs of the house, so that he could finally get a decent night's rest. And I hear sounds that sound like something inhuman screaming or crying. And initially I thought it was a coyote. I don't know if anyone's ever heard some of the crazy noises a coyote can make. And then I realized it was in my house. We're going to pick up next week talking about what that was. So tune in. Again, Kathleen Davison here with Pamela Beatty. We'll be here on Radio Memphis next Saturday on the DJ Bay Show, hopefully live, barring technical issues or personal ones. We will hopefully be live and taking your calls. Thank you.
Have a great week, you guys.